97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I got to highlight a little music here. This came out yesterday. It is sung by Mr. Bruce Springsteen, but it's a cover song.
I met my baby at a bar somewhere in Ohio. I guess I went a bit too far.
This is a song by a New York, used to be a punk artist way back in the late 70s and early 80s. Jesse Malin is his name. I'm a huge fan of Jesse's. He sort of lives in the E Street Band, you know, tree, if you will. There's a coaching tree out there for football. And with Springsteen, he has a lot of folks that have been with him or inspired by him or have worked with him. And what they're doing here is they're doing a tribute album for Jesse Malin. This is a terrible story. So he was actually playing a show last year, and all of a sudden he couldn't move his legs, and he has a very strange spinal condition, which has left him paralyzed below his waist. So Springsteen and Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day and a bunch of other folks, too. Elvis Costello, Lucinda Williams, Dinosaur Jr., they all have put together Jesse Malin's songs for this album called Silver Patron Saints, which comes out in a few weeks. And they've released the Green Day song and also the Springsteen song. But Jesse's story is just amazing because he just does not have the use of his legs anymore, and they're not exactly sure if that will ever come back, unfortunately. We'll get a preview of the Mizzou game with Chris Gervino from the Tigers Radio Network here in just a couple of minutes. But let's just kind of go on site right now to a tailgate in Columbia, somewhere around Faurot Field. Attorney General Andrew Bailey, where are you camped out right now? Are you with the fancy people in the suites, or are you actually out in the lots?
Man, I'm embarrassed to say I'm stuck in traffic trying to get to the lots, man. I'm a Lot X guy. That is where I tailgated. That was where the best tailgates were when I was in law school. So I like being out with the real fans, man.
Well, wait a second. I know my lots pretty well. Which one is Lot X?
Well, and they might have redesignated them, but that was the one at college and stadium. Yeah, right there, just past the hospital.
Yeah, closer to the hospital. I see what you mean there. Okay.
Yeah, it's way out there. It's where they put the folks that can't afford the nice passes, but they like to have the most fun.
Yeah, well, I like that. Look, I was teasing a friend of mine a couple of days ago on Tuesday morning. I said, are you tailgating yet? Because people are ready. And let's talk Mizzou football at the end of this just real quickly. But let's talk about some issues here. One of the big things that happened this week is the Supreme Court got involved in upholding your court order blocking the Biden-Harris student loan scheme. This is a cut from a guy down in Texas, Keith Self, who's a congressman.
How many times does the Supreme Court have to tell them no? The Biden-Harris administration wants to transfer the payment of these loans, because somebody's going to pay for it, to Americans who have already paid off their loans, or Americans, hardworking Americans who did not go to college, that don't have loans. This is not a forgiveness program. This is a transfer program to the taxpayers as a whole.
Yeah, and you know that, Andrew, which is why you filed the suit. There is a part of me, though, that wonders if they love for this to happen because they can play the class warfare game and say, see, the Supreme Court and evil guys like Andrew Bailey don't want to forgive you of your loans.
Yeah, that's right. Conservatives are trying to block the free money, but we all know there's no such thing as free money. Someone's paying it off, and we can't let Joe Biden saddle working Missouri families with Ivy League debt. But to the congressman's point, like, at what point is this a constitutional crisis? You have a president who is willfully defying a co-equal third branch of government, the federal judiciary, in the highest court in the land. I mean, imagine if a Republican had done this. Imagine if President Trump had just said, well, I don't care what the Supreme Court says. I'm going to keep doing what I want. The media and the left would have been in an uproar. And yet here, where Biden is essentially trying to buy votes, at Kamala Harris now, trying to buy votes in a key demographic in which they're losing ground, everyone's okay with it. The media's fine. They're going to rubber stamp it, and it takes us taking them to court to put a stop to it. Proud of the work we've done and to score another win to keep them in check and prevent them from behaving unconstitutionally.
Absolutely. Hey, have you seen, I want to kind of talk about this parole program, but have you seen the video from Aurora, Colorado with the Venezuelan gangs trying to knock down the doors of some of these apartments? Have you seen that yet?
I have, and it's frightening.
It's frightening.
Insane.
And so this kind of falls in line with what goes on with this parole program, right? Because there's an effort to have migrants that are here not legally in this country and just basically, you know, allow them to be here with no repercussions whatsoever. So explain what they're doing here with the parole program.
Well, since Biden took office, he and border czar Kamala Harris, and remember, she owns these bad policy positions and these policy failures as well. But the two of them contrived this parole process where they say, hey, look, we're going to let there's a statute that allows the federal government to parole individuals into this country for a limited purpose, for a limited time. And really what it was designed for is, like, if we need a witness to testify in a court in the United States of America against a cartel member, we can bring that person over for the testimony, then they go home.
Oh.
It is not a visa program. It is not a visa, but it's for individualized determinations, limited time, limited purpose. Well, what Biden and Harris did when they came into office is say, we're going to let in X number of people from Honduras, Y number of people from Guatemala, Z number of people from Haiti. That's a visa program. So they exploited, they perverted the plain text of the statute that created the parole process and turned it into a visa program that was never authorized by Congress. And so we took them to court and put a stop to it, proud of the work we're doing fighting back. It's not just that the Biden-Harris cabal have abandoned the border wall and refused to enforce the law at the border. They've hung an open sign through garbage like this where they pervert the law to get to that policy position.
Allow me, Andrew Bailey, to play the role of John Berman or someone at CNN. Andrew, she was not the border czar. You know that she was not the border czar. Why do you keep repeating that, even though she was the border czar? But they keep saying that.
It's like living in Stalinist Russia. Remember when Stalin would, like, airbrush the pictures when he would, like, have someone assassinated and have to airbrush them out of the picture? I mean, that's essentially the world we live in today with Biden-Harris.
Well, you know what? Some of this stuff that's going on with the media is very Soviet and Pravda-like, and it's just absolutely disgusting. And I don't know if you heard, we played the first question that Dana Bash released this afternoon from the interview with Harris and Walz, and it was just embarrassing. Basically, she gave them the answer to the question. The question was, why have you changed your position so much? But she said, have you just changed your positions because you're evolving and you're getting older and you're changing? So there's some Soviet-style media as well. Hey, help me out with this Marcellus Williams case, because I'm genuinely confused about what's happening with that particular case. It's getting a fair amount of coverage here in St. Louis.
Yeah, look, this is a convicted murderer, and his claims have been reviewed by numerous courts, to include the Missouri Supreme Court, who said there is no new evidence. And even more recently, the St. Louis County prosecutor came forward and said, well, we found new DNA on the murder weapon. Well, that's because the murder weapon was handled by the prosecutor's investigator at the trial.
Yeah, so his DNA was found on the weapon, on the knife, when they were trying to say that it was going to be more elaborate than that, right?
Yeah, they tried to say, no, there was some other murderer had handled the knife. No, that's not true. Law enforcement had handled
right.
The knife when they seized the knife and used the knife to convict this man of murder. And let's not forget the fact that the victim's belongings, the convicted murderer had them in his possession when he fled from the murder scene. So again, in all of these conversations, what irritates me the most is we forget not only about the victims of the crime who are serving a life sentence because they lost a loved one. And the fact that these defendants, these convicted murderers, has had numerous bites at the apple. And all they're doing is cherry picking a forum where they can finally find a judge that'll try to grant them relief on their claims. But the claims are bogus. And that's what every other court has decided. This isn't new.
No.
This isn't different. The only thing that's new and different is that they finally have cherry picked a judge that will give them the time of day.
And, you know, just as we're talking here, I go up on this ridiculous Innocent Project group. And if you go to their section on Marcellus Williams, they say DNA evidence proves Marcellus Williams is innocent. The prosecuting attorney seeks to vacate his right. No, it doesn't, right? It does not
lie.
At all. So
it's
now, but
yeah.
This is where it also gets confusing. So he did this this plea last week, the no contest plea, if you will, and that removed him at least temporarily from death row. Can he go back to death row? How is that going to all potentially work out?
Well, and that's the problem. It didn't actually remove the sentence and judgment for the ultimate punishment. The Missouri Supreme Court has issued a warrant that the death penalty be carried out against this individual. And the trial court can't overturn what a higher court has ordered. So, like, the whole thing was garbage. I mean, the whole thing was a joke because we knew that lower court judge couldn't undo what the Supreme Court had ordered. And that's when I talk about cherry-picking a judge, that's what I'm talking about. Look, these individuals are entitled by constitution to due process. And I would rather guilty people go free than innocent people be convicted. But what I'm saying here is that Marcellus Williams has had years and years and years, decades of court proceedings. He has received more due process than anyone in Missouri history that I can remember, certainly more due process than Mark Reardon or Andrew Bailey would get. And these claims have already been adjudicated. So he's
over
just
and over, right?
The
yeah, and he confessed to his girlfriend that he had done it. The girlfriend saw him dispose of the bloody clothes. This was a brutal murder. And by the way, I'm even personally embarrassed right now that I'm even mentioning his name, because what we should be mentioning is Felicia Gale, who was
right.
the victim here, who was stabbed to death in her home in University City. So let's hope that that's still. And I've talked about this the other day, Andrew. I go way back, even to my days in Columbia, Missouri, on the death penalty. I worked very closely with Kenny Hulsoff at the time, and Kenny was a special prosecutor for Jay Nixon when he was attorney general. He put a lot of people on death row. And, you know, for me, it's still the ultimate punishment for a very brutal crime. It doesn't fit everyone, but I have never backed away. And you know this, 99.9% of the cases that claim to be these people innocent, it's not innocence. They may be going for something that is a technicality in, you know, in the law and the way that they were prosecuted. And I'm fine with following the Constitution. I'm not advocating the prosecutors don't follow the Constitution. But my point is that this is really never about innocence. They call it the Innocence Project. Give me a break.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's never about innocence. They're always trying to find a technicality. And our system is designed to ensure quality control of the state. We don't want to lock up, and certainly we don't want to put to death innocent people. Our system works. This has been filtered time and time and time again. This evidence, this case has been filtered time and time and time again through numerous courts. There's nothing new or different happening here.
So one of the reasons I love, and I'm very close with Senator Schmidt, and Eric and I go way back, but I've always said that he's kind of like, he's not weird like a lot of politicians, and he follows normal things, and we talk baseball, and with you, you're like a real person too, Andrew Bailey. Go figure. And you love, we bond on black and gold. So here we go. Handicap this game tonight. Murray State, 47-point favorites or something like that. And we have an opportunity to be in the college football playoff this year, Andrew Bailey.
I think we take it. I think we cover the spread. And I'm here to tell you, the starters are out by the fourth quarter. M-I-Z.
C-O-U. Have fun tonight, Andrew.
God bless you, Mark. Talk soon.
All right. Take care. I'm jealous. Sue, there's still an opportunity for you to take over the show right now. If I leave right now, I could get there during the first quarter.
I guess Fred and I could read poetry.
Right, I'm out of here. Thank you. Thank you very much. Gone. No, I'm fine with watching this one on television.
Oh, right. That's very big of you.
I am excited. But Gervino's coming along here in just a couple of minutes, and he'll give us his take, the official sports angle, because he has been with the Tigers Radio Network on the basketball and the football side for a long time. Let me do a couple things related to presidential politics. We do have an audio cut of the day coming up as well. I was looking for this bite earlier. Now, we know, just to kind of update you here, Dana Bash has done the interview. All but 18 minutes with Tim Walz and Kamala Harris. It's going to air tonight on CNN, I guess, at 8 o'clock. So there were two questions that were released. This is the first one.
Generally speaking, how should voters look at some of the changes that you've made, that you've explained some of here in your policy? Is it because you have more experience now and you've learned more about the information? Is it because you were running for president in a Democratic primary? And should they feel comfortable and confident that what you're saying now is going to be your policy moving forward?
So that is called hand-holding with the interview subject, okay? And that's not a real serious question. I mean, it could have been if you would have asked it in a different direction. But what's maybe even more, it's not shocking or surprising,
no,
because we'd expect this, but she doesn't answer the question.
No.
Dana, I think the most important and most significant aspect of my policy perspective and decisions is my values have not changed. You mentioned the Green New Deal. I have always believed, and I have worked on it, that the climate crisis is real, that it is an urgent matter.
It's not, by the way.
Nope.
To which we should apply metrics that include holding ourselves to deadlines around time. We did that with the Inflation Reduction Act. We have set goals for the United States of America and, by extension, the globe.
Okay, one more follow-up question. I'm sorry, but the Inflation Reduction Act did not reduce inflation. Any comment on that, Kamala?
Around when we should meet certain standards for reduction of greenhouse gas emissions, as an example. That value has not changed.
What in the hell was she saying? Where was that part of the question? I don't even know what she's talking about there.
No, okay. She didn't ask that at all.
And then, wow, this one. This is a tough one from Dana Bash. Let me tell you, I got to give her credit for really getting down into the muck with Kamala and Tim Walz, asking really, really brutal, tough questions, challenging them.
You had a lot of Republican speakers at the convention. Yeah. Will you appoint a Republican to your cabinet?
Yes, I would.
Oh, she's so generous, isn't she?
But she won't.
Big-hearted.
And then, like Curtis Hox said, Liz Cheney or Adam Kissinger, Kinzinger.
And plus, who cares? What are your policies? You keep fluctuating. What is real?
Well, that's exactly right. And, you know, have you been dialed in? I don't know if Mark's talked about this in the morning, Sue, but the whole issue with the Arlington National Cemetery dust up from the other day where Trump goes and takes a question. Then there's an allegation that, you know, somebody comes forward from Arlington National Cemetery, says, look, you're not allowed to take pictures that are for political purposes at Arlington National Cemetery. They have some sort of dust up with the Trump folks. There's now an allegation that someone was physically maybe shoved. And NPR does this story, and they've done this story here for the last week, trying to make this a big deal. When the Gold Star families, who have not been contacted by this administration, even though they lost loved ones, they said, yes, come and pray with us here at the graves, and you can take pictures. Now, there was an ad that ran in 2020 with Joe Biden at Arlington National Cemetery. It was actually a commercial. They weren't filming a commercial. They were just taking pictures, and the families were taking pictures. But NPR and the legacy media want to make this look like it's this big scandal with Trump trying to order people around at the cemetery. Jennings on CNN makes a great point about this.
Honestly, the way Biden and Harris have treated these families and ignored them and disrespected them after one of the most disastrous decisions that they made in this White House, to me, is the most despicable part of this. And look, there's a lot of opinions about this, and everybody's got comments, but the only opinion I really care about are the families in question. And they said, as J.D. Vance reported, we had given our approval for Trump's official videographer and photographer to attend. We cherish these memories forever. We're deeply grateful for the president for taking the time to honor our children and for standing alongside us in our grief. I mean, they put out a long statement saying they could not have been happier to have Donald Trump there at Arlington with them. And he's given them more than the time of day. And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris can't even do that. Only people who are so craven about this
keep
could
going,
try to turn something positive, which is Donald Trump spending time with Gold Star families, into some political garbage attack. That's what I think. The only people who matter are Gold Star families. They invited Trump. He went, and they're happy he was there. And if that's not good enough for the Democrats, you know, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, STFU is what I'd like to say. I think J.D. Vance got close to that.
But to have those 13 Americans lose their lives and not fire a single person is disgraceful. Kamala Harris is disgraceful. We're going to talk about a story out of those 13 brave, innocent Americans who lost their lives. It's that Kamala Harris is so asleep at the wheel that she won't even do an investigation into what happened. And she wants to yell at Donald Trump because he showed up. She can go to hell.
Yeah, she can go to hell. And think about the dynamics here with what happened just a short time ago, where this administration completely ignored this anniversary where 13 soldiers died. How do you think Mark Schmitz feels here in St. Charles? It's disgusting. So the story that, and if you want more proof that the media is in the tank for the Harris administration or for the Biden administration or whoever the hell is running things right now, the real story is what Jennings is talking about. The fact that this administration has ignored these Gold Star families and their feelings are the ones that should matter here, but there's no mention of that in the reporting from NPR. And of course, when NPR does that story, then it gets fed out and that gives permission for CNN and the rest of the outlets to, you know, play into all the BS. It's absolutely disgusting, but they keep doing it time and time and time again. All right, we're going to lighten things up. We're going to talk Mizzou football coming up next with Chris Gervino. Audio cut of the day still coming as well. We have an audio cut of the day coming up, but let's go back to Columbia, Missouri. My friend Chris Gervino getting ready for a broadcast tonight. Mizzou and Murray State, the first game of the 24th season. Chris, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, Mark. How are you?
Fantastic. I am so excited. I'm disappointed because I'll be on the air here until 6 o'clock. I will not be in Columbia for the game. But holy smokes, dude, Murray State, the first game of the season, is a sellout tonight.
Well, that was a big deal for Mizzou to get that sellout. And they were getting closer and closer as the opening day approached here. And they've got it done. So they've kept the sellout streak alive. It's now 6 consecutive sellouts at Pearl Field, dating back to last season. So that's great. And, you know, the momentum is certainly all on Missouri's side.
Chris, you and I have been around Mizzou athletics for a long time. You've been covering this football team and basketball team for a long time. Do you ever remember the expectation game and the opportunities? Because, look, we would think that there's no way to compete for a national championship the way it used to be. But this is a very different year, isn't it?
It really is. You know, it's the number 11 ranking, first of all, for Missouri in both national polls is the best ranking in terms of a preseason listing since 2008. That was coming off the Cotton Bowl win over Arkansas in Dallas, and Chase Daniel was coming back for his senior season. So this is the highest preseason ranking since then. But I think also what you might be alluding to is it really sets up beautifully for Missouri this season. It's scheduled. They start with four consecutive games on Faurot Field: Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College. Mizzou will be decisive favorites over all of them. And then the fourth is Vanderbilt for the SEC opener. And, of course, that's been a team at the bottom of the SEC for many of these recent years. So it's a great chance for them to get off to a great start, Mark. They don't play, which is amazing. They don't play four of the top teams listed above them, four of the five in the preseason SEC poll. Missouri doesn't even play this year: Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, and LSU. And they do play the bottom four in the league preseason poll: South Carolina, Mississippi State, Arkansas, and Vanderbilt. They have bye weeks before two of the bigger games, Texas A&M and Oklahoma. I mean, I don't think you can get much of a better schedule, honestly, for an SEC team.
So what are your thoughts then? Because what's been said by some of the so-called experts out there, and this may be a good example of this. Look, the Tigers are 46.5-point favorites. That's an astronomical number, especially for Mizzou. But if you don't roll up on Murray State and some of these teams early, the committee is going to say, look, you had a weak schedule. You weren't, you know, powerful enough to beat some of these lower teams, you know, by enough. So there's risk in not, I don't want to say running up the score, but you got to really pound these teams early, don't you?
Well, that is kind of one of the unfortunate things, in my opinion, maybe uglier things about the system now. And when these teams, you know, play teams like Murray State, and everybody's doing it, Arkansas has got Arkansas Pine Bluff today, Ohio State's got Akron. I think then, you know, at the end of the year, if it's close and they're looking at strength of schedule, you really better have handled them. And you hate to see it get ridiculously out of hand and scores get run up. I mean, I don't like these matchups against, again, the lower division schools, but Missouri's doing nothing wrong. Everybody does it, right?
Yeah, it's part of the
game now. Everybody does it, at least the one that counts toward your record. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch that. You mentioned they're about 48. I've even seen 49-point favorites, and that's a ton of points, but yet they've played Murray State twice in the past, beaten them both times by 40 and 44 points.
So there you go.
Be right on the mark.
Yeah. So, Gervino, I don't know when it was. You probably remember this maybe by the year. I'm going to guess maybe 20 years ago, maybe 18 years ago. I go to Las Vegas a lot, and I was in Las Vegas for the opening weekend. It was a Thursday night game, and the Tigers were playing Troy State, and they were the outright favorites. And they not only didn't cover, but they lost to Troy State. I bring this up because, look, we have these things in our past, whether it's the fifth down game, the Nebraska game with the kick in the end zone. Coach Drink has to know that the fans are sometimes glass half empty type people, and we all brace ourselves and say, oh my gosh, let's not do a Mizzou type of thing. There's an awareness of that, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think after watching the Florida State game,
yes,
you know, Drinkwitz even mentioned how, you know, they lost to Georgia Tech on opening day. Now, again, I must say, you know, Murray State is not Georgia Tech. I mean, Georgia Tech's an ACC school, you know, a decent team that beat Florida State. You know, I just don't see an upset happening tonight, but you've got to be careful, certainly, in just about every game you've played and respect your opponent. But they're well aware of that. And I think it's going to be interesting because now, you know, Missouri, of course, was a team that surprised a lot as an underdog, if you will, last year and had an incredibly good season. Well, now it's a little different because Missouri, of course, is a team that has a target on its back, so to speak, has higher expectations. So people will be anything but taking them lightly on the opposite side of the field.
How do you replace Cody Schrader this year? I mean, you don't, but what do you do there?
Yeah, they're going to try with two guys. They got two transfers. Nate Noel is from Appalachian State. Marcus Carroll is from Georgia State. They're going to use them both. Noel will get the start. He's a smaller, quicker guy, and Carroll is a little bit bigger, about 30 pounds heavier. He's more of a physical runner. They're about 5'8 and 5'9 in height, so they're not big, big backs, but Carroll goes about 216 and Noel 187. So a little bit of combo attack there, but Schrader's going to be really tough to replace.
You know, a year ago, Chris, there were some fans, and I thought this was shameful, but there were some fans that were booing Brady Cook, right? And boy, did he rally last year. This kid has become so impressive. He's now one of the top quarterbacks in the country. I don't know if he'll get any Heisman buzz. Maybe, you know, maybe if he gets off to a great start. But I want you to talk about Brady Cook, his evolution, his leadership, and, you know, this connection he has with what's likely to be one of the next stars in the NFL, Luther Burden Jr.
Well, Brady Cook is the one reason, I think, more than any, and there were a lot, obviously. It's a team sport, but he was the one reason Missouri had such a great season last year. He was the quarterback, and he was just outstanding. I had people telling me, friends here in town, before last season, that they hoped he would not be the starting quarterback.
Right.
I remember telling them, well, he's going to be the starting quarterback because I'm lucky to go to practice and scrimmages, and he was clearly the best they had, and I knew he had showed improvement. Now, I never thought he'd have the season he had. He was absolutely incredible for a completion percentage, few mistakes, was just incredible. Had that long string without throwing an interception. So, again, they had a lot of great players. You mentioned one of them, Cody Schrader, and they had five guys from the defense drafted in the NFL, but Brady Cook, more than any one player, is the reason they had such a great season. That's a huge reason for optimism. They've got him back, and I will say, too, I think they're in much better spot than they were a year ago in terms of the backup quarterback. They've got Drew Pine, a transfer who's come in, an older player, and he's been at Arizona State and Notre Dame. He's seen the field quite a bit, and he's had a good camp.
That's what I've heard.
Brady's clearly the starter, right, and he'll be the starter, but God forbid something happened to Brady. I think they're in decent hands with a backup quarterback.
How would you assess the defense this year, right now?
Well, it's going to be the big question, just again, because literally about half the defense will now be in the NFL, including three defensive backs. But, you know, to Drinkwitz's credit, I think he's really developed some depth on the team. I remember walking with him last year after practice back toward the office and said, man, this is your deepest team, isn't it? And he said, absolutely. Well, that was last year, and I think it's now deeper this year than last year in terms of just the numbers they have at various positions. So, you know, that's going to be worth watching. I think the offense will be fine with Cook and Burden and three returning starting offensive linemen, two really good transfers. Defense should be pretty good, but you want to see some guys who are really going to get their first extended action and how they handle it.
You know, Chris, I've told this story at least one time on the air. Last year, I was at one of the games with my family. I don't remember which game it was. I might have even told you this, but we ended up kind of leaving a little bit early, and my wife and daughter wanted to go into the team store, which is on the south end zone, which is going to be renovated. But I was there in that end zone kind of looking down at the field, and I don't know why it was that vantage point, but I was lower, you know, more to the ground level. And I thought to myself, damn, you know, I've been around Columbia a long time going to football games, was at the fifth down game. I thought, this feels like real SEC football. I mean, the stadium looks great. Everything about the team, it just looks so cool. And now those renovations that I just mentioned in the south end zone, this is a program that has really vaulted itself into the top. I mean, I don't think you can say Alabama tier, but certainly one of the top tiers in all of college football.
Well, I think that's true. You know, again, you have the two premier conferences clearly starting now and going forward with the expanded playoff and the super conferences is the Power Four, but really it's the SEC and the Big Ten, I think, that are going to get most of the attention and be the strongest. And Missouri really wants to be a part of it and has made strides to it. And it's interesting because Laird Veach, the new athletic director, even made the comments somewhat similar to what you were just saying about how Missouri stadium improvements with the enhancement of the north end zone and that whole humongous project, which will take place over the next two seasons, is really going to give it the feel of more of a typical SEC stadium.
Yeah.
Put Missouri right in line with a lot of these other places. I thought that was accurate, and that really speaks to, I think, what you were just alluding to.
Yeah, and I screwed up my end zones. I meant the north, and when I said the south, I meant the north for sure. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't want to call you on it. I figured you and our listeners knew.
Well, Gervino, thank you so much. Look, I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to make a bold prediction here for you. For you and for me, because I enjoy Mizzou sports. I think this is going to be one of the most exciting years in all of Mizzou sports, because I think Dennis Gates is going to have a heck of a team as well. So this is going to be a fun year, and you're going to enjoy it.
Well, that's the hope and the plan. And yeah, you know, basketball added a couple of really key transfers, among others. The kid from Duke, Mark Mitchell, is legit forward, and they got a guard, Tony Perkins, from Iowa. So they want to get back on the positive side, and like we said, football sets up beautifully. You just got to go do it now.
Absolutely. Hey, have fun tonight. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon, Chris.
Okay, Mark. Thanks.
That's my old J school pal, Chris Trevino, who really never left Columbia, Missouri, which is amazing. He's got so much talent. You know, he was a sports anchor at KOMU, which is the, you know, the student station, but he was there well after he was a student. Then he went to KMIZ, which was the ABC affiliate. Actually, I might got that in reverse. He might have started at the ABC affiliate out of school and then KOMU, but he retired from all that and he only does his Mizzou stuff now, which certainly that's enough. But, you know, Sue, you were kind of asking, and I can't give you a great answer. Maybe I should have asked Chris this, because earlier this afternoon you were saying, wait a second, with you know, the casual fan hearing 46 or 48 points for a, you know, a game,
a victory,
why, you know, why do you have games like that? Well, this is unfortunately kind of the way that college athletics work. Earlier in the season, like I was mentioning Lindenwood, I love the fact that Lindenwood now is a Division I program.
That's nuts.
Right, but they're, you know, they're in a different conference, not quite where the SEC is, but they're playing KU, I think, tonight, because now they're Division I. So they'll get smoked in all likelihood, and they'll get a big paycheck because they're playing a, you know, a Big 12
team. Oh, so it's money. It's the money?
It is about money. I mean, all of college athletics at this point.
What was I thinking? Of course it's about money.
Right, but so then keep in mind that, you know, in order, I don't know if this was translated during the interview, but so if Mizzou's going to make it to the college football championship, which is the playoff, which is now going to be 12 teams, you have to not only have an impeccable record, but in their case, because they have a weak schedule, you have to really have big margins of victories. So if you squeak by a team like Buffalo or Murray State or even Boston College, that's not going to bode well, even if you get the victory, for your chances to be in the playoff, if that makes sense.
It does. So they don't play the heavy teams, but if they do, they have to win by a lot.
Yeah, I think that kind of really kind of calls it down. But everything is set up. This is why a lot of us are doubters, because everything is set up so perfectly for Mizzou to have, you know, a season that we sort of expect. And at least by the time we go to Alabama, I mean, Texas A&M comes before that. That's a home game. No, that's away. That's October 5th. Then you got UMass away, Auburn in Columbia, but then Tuscaloosa on October 26th. There is a chance, I'm getting way ahead of myself here, but there is a chance that we'll be undefeated by that game in Alabama, and that makes that a huge game down in Tuscaloosa.
You are getting ahead of yourself.
I know, but so you can tell me tomorrow afternoon when Mizzou barely gets by, you know, Murray State. By the way, do you know the Murray State, what their mascot is?
No.
They're the Racers, and I'll just tell you this funny story. Back when I was covering Mizzou basketball, I sat on the press table, right down there on the floor. And I was always on the end of the press table where the opposing team was right across from me.
Yeah.
This was at Hearn Center. So Coach Stewart was on the other side. I was on the side where right directly across was the opposing team. One year, this was probably 88, 89, Murray State, and it's a team that had played, you know, Mizzou quite a bit. Murray State comes to play basketball. And I don't know if it was the coach's wife or who this was, but there was a woman that was behind the bench who was a fan of Murray State. And this is one of those things, you know, how your brain remembers things and you have these weird memories. I just remember her with this annoying high-pitched voice saying, "Rebound Racers!" And she kept saying, "Rebound Racers!" over and over and over again. And that's every time I hear Murray State, my brain takes me back to like 1988 with this woman saying, "Rebound Racers!"
Oh, that's funny.
But I'll never forget that that's their team, right?
Exactly.
That's ingrained for sure. Audio cut of the day is coming up next.
St. Louis is home for conservative talk.
You're listening to The Mark Reardon Show.
Well, 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 we have almost arrived at Friday, which means a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. We got a great panel. Jane will be back here after last Friday off former State Senator Jeff Smith and current State Senator Nick Schor. It's been a while since I've seen Nick. Actually, he just reached out. Nick, I got your text. Thank you very much. He was very complimentary of the Chris Trevino interview. He's a big Mizzou guy as well. I have a couple of things here for cut of the day, so let me get right to it. The other thing I wanted to mention about tomorrow, we'll have the regular stuff. Paul Hall on entertainment. Mr. Cusimano will be here with his take on what happened in Columbia, which will happen in just a couple of hours here, a little bit more than an hour, actually, for the kickoff against Murray State. Chris Hansen will be here tomorrow. Also, they have a great music festival in Grand Center, Music at the Intersection. And the lineup, Chaka Khan is going to be there, Robert Randolph, a bunch of artists that I play on the bumper music, like Trombone Shorty, who's outstanding, and Trombone Shorty's guitar players from right here in St. Louis as well. So we're going to feature some of that tomorrow night here on 97.1 FM Talk. Let's do this, though.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, I got a couple of things here. We already played Dana Bash and the embarrassing question that she asked. They released two clips, so I'm not going to bore people with that. If you want to be bored by that, you can tune into CNN tonight. But I like this. They went out and they asked, you know, white folks, white liberals, if voter ID laws are racist. Like, what do you think of voter ID laws?
What opinion on voter ID laws?
Yeah, they're usually pretty racist and they're bad.
I think voter ID laws are a way to perpetuate racism.
Would you say would you go as far as say they're, those laws are racist?
For sure.
Do you think it suppresses the African-American vote?
Definitely.
Because
they're less likely to have state IDs.
Minority voters are less likely to have the kinds of IDs that have been described or required.
These type of people don't live in areas with easy access to.
These type of people, that's one of my favorite ones. So then they also, here's what they did too. This is weird, right? They went out and they talked to black people, said, hey, what do you think about ID laws? Do you have an ID?
Normally, you carry ID around?
Yes, I have state ID.
Do you carry ID?
Yes, I do.
Do you know anybody who, any black person who doesn't carry ID?
No. Everyone that I know has an ID. Why would they think we don't have ID?
That's a lie. Why would they say that?
Do you have ID?
Yes.
Because I have my ID and my friends have their ID, so like, we know what we need to carry around.
I mean, talk about racist. What's racist is the white woke, you know,
yes,
liberals that are like, oh yeah, those are racist. Why? Well, because they've been told that they're racist by the media who's lied about this for, I don't know, I've been covering voter ID laws for literally 25 years. And when I was on KMOX, this goes back probably 12 years ago, I begged people, and I would say it all the time, and I challenged, you know, these idiot officials in the city of St. Louis that kept making these claims. Show me one person. That's all I asked for. I said, show me one person. Bring me one person, open invitation, who doesn't have an ID. They could never do it. Because everybody has an ID.
Yeah.
And if you don't have an ID, you can't function in life, okay? Even the damn migrants have IDs now because we're handing them out to them. On the topic of the interview tonight, I thought this was good. Stephen Miller kind of sums things up.
Mission Control spent less time figuring out how to get a man onto the moon than it took for them to figure out they could do a taped interview with Tim Walz. What better way to show you're ready to take on Putin, to take on Xi, to take on ISIS, to take on the drug cartels, to take on America's former enemies, than to show that you have the moxie as a liberal Democrat to sit down in a taped, edited interview with a babysitter. I mean, Normandy, the invasion of Normandy wasn't courageous compared to this.
There you go. I think he has nailed it. You know, the one thing we have not heard yet, they released a couple of these clips, and one of them was just stupid. She actually, Dana Bash asked Kamala Harris if she'd appoint a Republican to her cabinet. Like, that's one that the campaign said, hey, Dan, why don't you ask this? Because then she'll say yes and it'll look good, right? Completely embarrassing. But we haven't heard from Tim Walz. Like,
no?
We didn't hear Tim Walz. Any clips from Tim Walz? We'll have to see if he just sits there with his hands folded or if he's the, you know, the attack dog. He comes in and he tries to save Kamala. I will not be watching live tonight. I will be watching the Mizzou football game and enjoying time with my family. We will, however, won't take very long to break it down. It's like an 18-minute interview.
Yeah, that was a real toughie.
Right. We'll have some lowlights tomorrow afternoon. It's going to be a great roundtable as we take you into Labor Day weekend. Jane Duker, former State Senator Jeff Smith, current State Senator Nick Schwer. Sue, can I just say to you, M-I-Z, you know what you're supposed to say here?
Z-O-U.
Thank you. You did it. Have a great night. We'll talk tomorrow. Enjoy the game.
You too.
Get more at 971talk.com.